Most of us live in a constant state of surprise. Why? Because we don't control our story. And when the script of our life delivers an unforeseen twist in the plot, we're thrown into a season of mystery, wondering what's coming next. Today on Insight for Living, you'll hear Chuck Swindoll continue a message introduced Friday called Prevailing Through Prayer. During the next half hour, Chuck reminds us that God often answers our prayers with a sudden, unexpected outpouring of His grace. Other times, His answers aren't so obvious. But no matter what, God always proves faithful when we seek Him.
God specializes in the things that are, for people like us, impossible. And the exhilaration of that when He does such thing is beyond description. There's probably not a person sitting in this room today who doesn't have a story of an impossible event where God stepped in and brought about a change. Brought an answer where you were left earlier with just a question or a series of questions. Brought a solution where you earlier had only a problem or a challenge. Brought fulfillment where earlier there had only been a dream. Brought relief or release or peace when earlier there had only been fear and worry. I found that the secret of inner peace in the midst of impossibilities, and don't miss this, the secret of inner peace when things are impossible is perspective. It's perspective. It's how we view that situation at the time it's still impossible that determines the presence or the absence of peace. On our way to Acts 12, I want to go through the back door and look first at 1 Samuel chapter 16. It's where Samuel has been sent out on a headhunting mission to find the next king. Saul has proved himself unworthy of the task. And so this is in the context of the search. And Samuel finds his way to the home of Jesse. Jesse is the father of a number of boys. And he is honored, of course, to find Samuel there with his bag of oil about to anoint someone, perhaps one of his own sons. And so parading in front of Samuel are these boys. And verse 6 tells us of one of the boys named Eliab. And he came before Samuel, and Samuel thought, and it's quote here, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before me. This is the one." Tall, dark, handsome. But the Lord stopped Samuel at that moment and said, no, no, no. Verse 7, "Do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." I want to suggest to you that one of the greatest adventures you can be engaged in is concerted and deliberate and specific prayer. I mean, chances are good you've tried everything else. And I'm talking about fervent, confident, specific prayer. Petition, where you nail down precisely what it is that isn't right, that isn't working, or that isn't getting resolved, and you lay it before God and you leave it for Him to work through. And the good thing is, when He does, it may not be as you had planned it, but not only will you change, the situation will turn out as He would be honored in it. Because you can find other solutions that'll be temporary results, but they won't be His kind of Christ-honoring results. Now, all of that for a the rest of our time to take a look at Acts chapter 12. Talk about an impossible situation, and talk about being discouraged if you viewed it from the outward point of view. Thankfully, Peter did not. Chapter 12 of Acts comes after all these things we've been looking at. After the Lord has ascended, after the birth of the church, and the beginning of the body. This has happened after Philip's evangelistic work with the Ethiopian. This is all in the flow of events, even before the journeys to the remotest part of the earth have begun. This is an interlude, if you will, that Luke includes, I think, to remind us that God's work is a work of occasional miracles, where he proves himself strong when we are faced with really impossible situations. Chapter 12 begins, "About that time, Herod the king laid hands on some who belonged to the church in order to mistreat them. And he had James, the brother of John, put to death with a sword." Now, if you and I had lived at that time, and we had been a member of the body, and we had known James, or we had been aware of some Christians being mistreated, chances are good we'd be pretty discouraged. We may even feel desperate, because this is Herod the king. What a guy. He happens to be the grandson of Herod the Great, an intimate friend of the Roman Emperor Caligula. He was from a long line of conniving, deceitful, jealous, profligate, cruel creatures who carried out unreasonable acts against Christians deliberately and as often as he could. Josephus says of this Agrippa, "He was a vain man, scrupulously observing Jewish rites." The Baptist scholar A.T. Robertson adds, "He was anxious to placate his Jewish subjects while retaining the favor of the Romans. So he built theaters and held games for the Romans and Greeks, and he slew Christians to please the Jews." Merrill Unger adds, "He was keenly fond of popularity, gifted with extraordinary powers of eloquence, and possessed much personal magnetism." This is a man who is powerful and persuasive. He is a pagan with charisma, and he is in an authoritative position, even able to behead someone whom he may please to do, and that he does with James, the brother of John. He puts him to death with a sword. It's a terrible time, and this all happened during that time. And if that wasn't bad enough, the third verse adds, "When he saw that it pleased the Jews," remember he's a man pleaser, "he proceeded to arrest Peter also." Now, why didn't he go ahead and behead Peter? Well, the last sentence tells you. "It was during the days of unleavened bread." During this feast time, this Jewish week of unleavened bread, it wasn't allowed for there to be trials or sentencing of any kind. And so he simply puts Peter, verse 4, he seizes him and puts him in prison. But the plan, of course, is to kill him, just like he's killed James, the brother of John. His hope was to wipe out the leadership of the church. And one by one, they are beginning to witness these things happening. It's, I say again, an impossible situation. Peter is now seized and thrown in prison, and to make matters even more impossible, he was delivered to four squads of soldiers to guard him, intending after the Passover to bring him out before the people. So Peter was kept in prison. I don't know if any of you have any friends who have been imprisoned. If you may not have. And chances are good you don't know anyone in prison personally right now. Some of you may. One of our now grown kids has a very good friend who is in prison right now. And he has visited him, and we have prayed for him, and the situation is pretty desperate where he is, and it looks like he'll be there for a number of years longer. When you have a relationship like this, or you love someone who does, your heart beats a little faster when you read about somebody in prison. Other than that, it's just an imaginative thing to you. You think, well, that's too bad. It's pretty serious, but it doesn't touch you. But when someone you know is incarcerated, you sort of pause here, and you have a feeling for, especially someone like Peter, who has done nothing wrong. Now, if you view things outwardly, you live depressed, especially when you know this man is a killer, Herod, and you know this plan for Peter is not to sustain his life, but to take it. And you know it's only a matter of time, and you realize he's surrounded by guards. The chains on him are locked. He's shackled, and it is humanly impossible to get to him. You think prisons are bad now. Back then, they were, well, to us, beyond description. And behind it all is a madman who has nothing more in mind than pleasing people. And there were enough people who hated what God was doing in that early church to say to him, we need to get rid of Peter too. So the result is the people of God did what they could do. Verse 5, prayer for him was being made fervently by the church to God. That's exactly what they should have been doing. One of the translations renders fervently, unrelentingly. I like that word. Unrelentingly. I take it they did this around the clock. I take it every meal included the name of Peter. Every gathering of worship, underground though it may have been, they remembered Peter. They fervently prayed for Peter. Now, pause and apply it. On this ship, before you ever, we ever dock and you begin the depressing experience of getting your stuff off the ship, and even worse, finding your bag among multiple millions of other bags that look just like yours or whatever. Before you ever get to that tomorrow, I challenge you to start your prayers now. Pray not only for this which is to come, but for that which is you left at home. It'll be right there when you get back. It'll be right there. But you can be different. I urge you to pray unrelentingly about that. Or you'll have the same perspective you had when you left. And this cruise will have done very little for your perspective. They made fervent prayer for Peter. Verse 6, on the very night when Herod was about to bring him forward, so it's getting toward the end of the feast time, unleavened bread, Peter was sleeping. You talk about being at ease. Peter is asleep. He's not sweating it. You know what Peter thought? I'm going to be killed. Unless God intervenes, I might as well have a good night's rest. I'm just going to trust him. I'm going to rely on him. I'm not going to sweat it. How in the world could he have slept? Would I have slept? I probably would not have slept. I confess to you. I would have probably been awake. And I think probably most of you would have too. But Peter, he's been through a lot of stuff. And he's learned the Lord can come through in his own way and in his own time. And I'm going to count on him to do that. I'm going to rest in him. So he's dressed for bed, as we're going to see in a minute. He's tucked in. By the way, while sleeping, he's got two soldiers bound with two chains, and guards are in front of the door watching over the prison. Luke goes overboard to make it clear that there's no way he's going to talk his way out of this. There's no way they're going to slip in and activate an escape. Now, the behold is written there in verse 7 to get your attention. Enter the beginning of a miracle. An angel of the Lord suddenly appeared, and a light shone in the cell. Elizabeth Barrett Browning once wrote in Aurora Lee, "God answers sharp and sudden on some prayers and thrusts the thing we have prayed for in our faces." Had that happen? I have had that happen. Not nearly as often as I would wish, but I have had that happen. I have prayed and almost had the prayer interrupted by a phone ringing, telling me of God's intervening. And I have prayed and I have gotten a bold, lengthy no or wait, and the answer was not as I had requested it. But I had prayed. And these people are praying and they're remembering him. And Peter's in a deep sleep. And he's not doing anything to earn this. He's not in any way concerned about it. But look at what happened. A light shines all about him in the cell and struck Peter's side and woke him up, saying, "Get up quickly." His chains fell off his hands. You wonder if Charles Wesley got his line from that in his great piece, "And Can It Be?" My chains fell off. Remember the scene? Remember the setting? The dungeon? My heart was free. I went forth and followed thee. Maybe he got it from this. His chains fell off his hands. They suddenly snapped. A light flashed on so he could find his clothes. I don't know what's happened to the guards. Maybe they're in a kind of a daze, some kind, dreamy time warp. And he said to him, "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me." So get dressed. Come on, Peter, can't go out in the street looking like that. And he went out and continued to follow, and he did not know that what was being done by the angel was real, but thought he was seeing a vision. Isn't that great? Peter gets no credit for any of this. I don't know if you have a sleepwalker in your family, but our oldest of four was a sleepwalker. And there were times I'd be watching the late night news or the sports, and Kurt would walk in, and his eyes would be big. He had his bedroom downstairs, and the rest of us were slept upstairs, and the TV was down there, and he'd walk by the television. He said, "Did you see them?" And I'd say, "Son, you know, here we go again. Dad, did you see them?" And it says, all in his sleep. So he goes to the sliding glass door, which we had there, and he says, "We've got to get out." I said, "I'll tell you what, why don't we just wait and let them come on in?" "Dad, we have got to get out of here." I said, come on, Kurt. So we go back, I lay him back down. And the next morning, I say to him, "Hey, Kurt, you remember walking in and warning me about they're here?" And he said, "About what?" I said, "You went to that back." "He said, Dad." And I said, "Come here." And I show him his fingerprints on the glass door where he wants to push it open. He said, he puts his hands there and he goes, "Oh, wow. Oh, no, I didn't remember any of that." He didn't remember a thing of the experience. This is Peter. Peter goes, "Man, what is this? Is this happening?" Kind of dreamlike state. And how did I get dressed? And he thought he was seeing a vision. When they had passed the first and second guard, well, what were they doing? Maybe he was made invisible. You know, when God's up to something, he can pull it off any way he wishes. It doesn't say the angel had wings, so wasn't going flap, 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 and all over the place. I think the angel was a manifestation of another human being, and I think there was evidence that after Peter thought about it, made him realize that it was that, and probably from Peter. Luke got his information about all of this. And they passed the guard. They came to the iron gate that leads into the city, which opened for them by itself. Isn't that something? This iron gate. And they went out and went along one street, and immediately the angel departed. Poof. That's what you call a great jailbreak. I mean, he was free. I was disturbed to read William Barclay's comment. In this story, we do not necessarily need to see a miracle. It may well be the story of a thrilling rescue and escape. Well, I mean, a light shines, shackles fall off, guards are walked by, a gate opens by itself, he's standing there completely freed, and no alarms are sounding, no whistles blowing, no screams in the jail talking about somebody has escaped or some rescue has been pulled off. It was just as only God could do it. And you know the great thing about this? You can't explain it. You know the great thing about that? You don't have to. It takes more faith to believe that it was a rescue and escape than it does just to believe that that he was just miraculously removed. Now, I know you can be crazy about stuff like this. And I know that some people go that far. They expect to see that kind of thing every day. And that's unbalanced. That's not reasonable. Miracles don't happen every day. I probably in my lifetime have not seen five or heard of five miracles. I mean, miracles. I like Gary Richmond's comment, who said several years ago, if miracles happened all the time, they'd be called regulars. But they're miracles. It means they cannot be explained scientifically with reason. They defy understanding. And they usually occur immediately.
You're listening to Insight for Living, and a message from Chuck Swindoll about prevailing through prayer. Find us online at insightworld.org. And there's much more we need to discover on this subject, so please stay with us. We'll hear a closing comment from Chuck in just a moment. The sermon you enjoyed today represents just one small portion of the comprehensive 6-part series called Adventuring with God. To purchase the CDs or download the audio files, go online to insight.org. Well, for more than 35 years, we've made it our mission to make disciples, following the commandment of Jesus. Along with you, we believe it's our role to declare His name, not only by radio, but through any means possible. And in this spirit, we've prepared a devotional book for you, designed to help you embrace and celebrate 30 different names of Jesus. I'll explain how you can get a copy in just a moment. Chuck?
Most of us were given at least 3 names at our birth: our first name, our middle name, and our last. For a lifetime, those titles are attached to our identity. But when you stop and think about it, they don't really define our personality or explain our character. The names ascribed to Jesus, however, are far more profound. Perhaps more than 200 names for Him appear in both the Old and New Testaments. Names like Wonderful, Counselor, Prince of Peace, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the bright and morning star, as well as Emmanuel, Lamb of God, Light of the World, Lion of the Tribe of Judah. Oh, wonderful names to describe our Savior. For more than 35 years, Insight for Living has passionately proclaimed the names of Jesus, using every means possible. And we're committed to doing so well into the new year and far beyond that one.
but we cannot do it alone. Your financial partnership is critically important. Believe me when I tell you that. Please be certain to include Insight for Living as you give generously. First to your local church, and then to the ministries that touch your life. Your special end-of-the-year gift is received today with great gratitude, and immediately put to work to unleash the good news to all who will hear. The Savior, yes, the Messiah, the Lord has been born today in Bethlehem, the city of David.
And here's how to respond to Chuck Swindoll. You can choose one of two avenues. If you're listening in the United States, give us a phone call right now at 1-800-772-8888. You can also go online and make a donation at insight.org. Again, that's insight.org. Your donations to Insight for Living are making an impact. It's your generosity that allows us to provide these daily programs. And today, to say thank you for your financial gift, we'll be sending a devotional book that originates from the teaching ministry of Chuck Swindoll. It's an original production of Insight for Living called Names of Jesus. With the Christmas season right around the corner, we knew this creative celebration of Jesus would provide an appropriate focus for you and your family. 30 chapters highlighting 30 names of Jesus. We're grateful for your much-needed support. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org. I'm Dave Spiker. More biblical wisdom on prevailing through prayer coming up Tuesday from Chuck Swindoll and Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Prevailing Through Prayer, was copyrighted in 2001, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2014 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.